Okay. Thanks to everyone who's joined in this morning. I see on the screen here that there are 25 participants this morning. So thank you for making the effort to be a part of the service this morning. I know it's not ideal. I know it has any number of glitches that are going to interfere with an experience that should be one of worship and sort of community, but even if it's virtual, I think it's helpful and the best we can do at the moment. The lectionary readings that were suggested for today, the one from Ezekiel and the one from John, in a way, I don't think they could be more appropriate for a time of pandemic and social distancing. The image that we get in Ezekiel of these dry bones scattered around a valley that are brought together and joined with sinew and flesh and skin, and the raising of Lazarus, I think they're powerful images of a caring God who's ready to intervene to bring hope and breathe new life when things seem darkest. For those who watched the Steinman service earlier and the children's story that was read there, it's a nice story. It'll be okay is the message. God is there. God is a caring, loving God. I kind of wish that stories like that would also be a little bit less Pollyanna-ish about God's care for us, because yes, ultimately it will be okay. I wish though that kids could get the message that it will be okay ultimately, but we're there when things are hard. We're there for each other when things are hard. And it's not that we won't have to go through times that are difficult or a little bit scary, but yes, God is with us, but we're there with each other as well. But to get to the passages that were selected, there are a few things that particularly stand out for me in the passage from John, the raising of Lazarus. And some of the things that stand out, I've already addressed at other times and other meditations. For one thing, the attitude of Thomas, who encourages the other disciples to accompany Jesus to Bethany so that we may die with him. I suggested elsewhere that I think that that's probably one of the most poignant expressions of love for and loyalty to Jesus that we find anywhere in the New Testament. It's also a bit of an echo of Jesus' own words a bit later in John's Gospel when he says that there's no greater love than laying down your life for your friends. And it's, I think, a bit of an echo of our current situation and an expression of an attitude of, to an extent, we're all in this together. We stand together, we'll fall together. Hopefully, in the current context, the idea is that we will not fall together, that we will stand together, and we'll do it by being together, but at a distance, which is a bit counterintuitive, perhaps. But the message is there. We're in this together. We're part of how this plays out immediately and in our broader circles. Another thing that stands out for me in the Lazarus passage is the fact that Jesus dallies for a couple of days in Jerusalem before he responds to the message from Mary and Martha that Lazarus is dying. And I've suggested again that can be seen like a heartless and maybe even a cruel decision if Jesus knows that Lazarus is going to die. He's letting Lazarus die. He's letting Mary and Martha struggle with that loss, and he chooses not to go and prevent it. And yet, the fact that once he's there, and that he weeps when he's at Lazarus' tomb, I think that belies any sense that he's cruel or unfeeling. And again, I think it's an expression of the depth of his affection for Lazarus and is for his sisters, but I think it's also an indication that this death affects him on a deeply personal level, even though he knows he's about to raise this man from the dead. In other words, I think it reassures me that even Jesus doesn't trivialize death or struggling or illness like that or make light of it because the person has gone to a better place, for example. He knows that it provokes a prevents sense of loss, a profound sense of loss, and that loss should be acknowledged and should be respected, even though ultimately, yes, it will be okay. And it reminds me a little bit of a haiku poem that I came across decades ago. And I'm not a big fan of poetry. I don't read a lot of poetry. I'm not a haiku master of any sort. And I'm not that familiar with haiku, but the particular haiku was written by a lay Japanese Buddhist priest, Kobayashi Isa, around the beginning of the 19th century. Now he's considered one of the great haiku masters. And it addresses the Buddhist belief that our existence is a transitory thing. It's an illusion. It's a world of dew without substance. And his poem reads, "So this world of dew is a world of dew. And yet, there's a great depth of feeling, I think, in those few lines. That yes, this our faith tells us this about the world, and yet it seems so real. The pain, the suffering that I know I need to go through as part of existence, it hurts. It's suffering all the same. It's apparently Issa's most famous haiku, and it was written about a month after his daughter died. Another one of his poems, found under his pillow after his death. Again, haiku, so very short, very concise. Washing the newborn, rinsing the corpse. It's brilliant, I think. As I said, I'm not a huge fan of poetry, and certainly not of the trite Hallmark type, but I love reading and coming across something that can so concisely capture an image of the human condition on some level, and that can capture this cycle of life. We wash the newborn to bring that child into life. We rinse the corpse to bookend that life. What do we do with this cycle? And to get back to Lazarus, finally, the reaction of Martha when Jesus tells him to open the tomb, and this woman who's just expressed her belief in Jesus as the Messiah, as the one who's been sent to Israel, and has affirmed his statement that he is the resurrection and the life, when he says, open the tomb, she basically says, are you sure you want to do this? The body is going to stink. I like that passage because there's nothing sanitized about it. There are no flowers bringing sweet smells to the visitation. Everyone's in pain, including Jesus, and they're freely giving voice to their fears, to their doubts, to their grief. And these are all people of faith. Struggling maybe with how much trust to put in God and how much trust to put in Jesus, but they're all first and foremost human beings with a need to be together in difficult times. Thomas needs to be with Jesus if Jesus is going to his death. Jesus needs to be with Mary and Martha, if only to show them that death is not the final word on life. And Mary and Martha need to be with those in their community who are grieving with them. And they need to be with Jesus too, because they know instinctively that somehow, even if Lazarus has died, that God will still find some way of showing them that they haven't been abandoned. And I think the fact that we need to gather with others when we're in distress makes it a bit easier to understand why some faith groups have chosen to continue their physical gatherings even in the face of the coronavirus infection. And I obviously do not agree on any level with the attitude of some pastors who are continuing to hold church services, physical church services, because they're convinced that they will be protected by the Holy Spirit. You've probably all read of at least one Louisiana pastor who's telling his congregation, you know, to come worship together, 1,000 people last Sunday, telling them that if they get sick, he'll lay hands on them and heal them if they get infected, in the same way that he claims to have healed AIDS and cancer. So no social distancing for that group. I think it's wildly irresponsible on the part of this pastor and others like him, and it's reflective of some kind of warped megalomania, I think. But as I said, I think I understand why the congregation members might want to seek out each other's company and mutual comfort when they're frightened and confused about how to deal with the uncertainty of the times. It's why we have funerals. It's why we have vigils and church services, to be in contact with people who share our lives at a time when our lives have been turned upside down. And it brings, on some level, a sense of security, of predictability, and of comfort. And so, even if it's not perfect, even if it has its limitations and its technical challenges, I hope that we can figure out how to use this technology or some other form of virtuals connecting with each other to keep us connected as a larger group. I know it can be a bit cumbersome to have to deal with all the things that can go wrong with the breaking up of sound or video, with the coming in, coming out, interruptions, and a sense of disjointed flow, maybe. I know that there's all kinds of things that can go wrong with it, but I think it's healthy to be able to at least see each other, at least a picture of each other, all of us as a group, even if only virtually on a regular basis. So my prayer for all of us is that we can find that way to be connected. I hope at least once a week we can come together like this as a full group. Through the week, smaller groups can connect a bit more intentionally, perhaps. But even if all we do is get to look at each other's face on the screen on a Sunday morning and see that, yes, so-and-so is still there, still seems to be doing okay, and has a chance to share with the rest of us, I think that's healthy for us as a community. So thank you, and blessings on all of this. Thank you.
Thank you, John.